rather be a new topic. So we try to find topics that are relevant, lamaisa, contemporary issues. I remember several years ago when I was in the Kollelion in Yeshiva, so they used to send us out to different communities to speak about different esoteric, quote-unquote, contemporary halachic issues. So they always wanted to hear about something which was very, you know, either controversial or something that wasn't so common type of shayla. Nobody was interested really in hearing the, you know, the ABCs of Bukhah Shabbos. So I remember, one year, I think it was Rabbi Simon had prepared a drush. He was going to go out and speak about the whole, spend, walk around the whole country speaking about Matilas Yadayim. So they nixed that topic. But don't worry, we're not talking about those now. So they nixed that topic. Told me, can't talk about Matilas Yadayim. Why? They said that it wasn't contemporary enough. So he said, contemporary enough, you wash the Tzidayim, it's a mitzvah you do probably more than any other mitzvah. If I make the cheshma, I think that's the asher kiddushanu mitzvah of tzivanu that you make more than any other brichza mitzvah in the entire lifetime. So they said that wasn't contemporary enough. So we came to the realization that contemporary means something that's not in the Shulchan Aruch. If it's in the Shulchan Aruch, it's already old stuff. Nobody wants to hear about that. So I decided that we'll talk about something that is in the Shulchan Aruch. So I mean, that's very, very old stuff. It goes all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. And that is the halachas of Bichos Tefillin. So something which is a mitzvah you do day in, day out. So it's important, we might as well get the basics, get the background as to what the correct way to perform this most precious, these two most precious mitzvahs is. So when we speak about Echos Tefillin, so I really want to break up Echos Tefillin into two distinct categories. One is in terms of the Chepts of Tefillin, in terms of what constitutes a pair of Tefillin, the halachas of the Parshas, the Batim, the Ritzuas, things that not just Sofim have to be familiar with, but each of us have to be familiar with and make sure that Tefillin are in fact in tip-top shape. And then number two, the halachas of the mitzvah of Tefillin, the sense of how one puts on Tefillin, where one puts on Tefillin, the Mokom Anochos Tefillin, when one puts on Tefillin, was a timely topic, especially in the next couple of days, whatever, in terms of the Zman of Menachos Tefillin. So hopefully we'll talk about that second aspect of the mitzvah of Tefillin afterwards. So as we begin, in terms of the Chepts of Tefillin, what constitutes, what is defined as a pair of Tefillin? So basically, just about all of the Chos Tefillin is pure halacha l'moshe Messina. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Menachos that this is, in a sense, a unique area of halacha, that mamash just about everything is derived from halacha l'moshe Messina. There are very, very few psukim that talk about Tefillin. The same pasuk all the time, k'shat and l'seidach, but the pasuk doesn't really tell us what the os looks like, doesn't really tell us what the tatafos look like. So just about everything in terms of the manufacturing of Tefillin is absolutely pure halacha l'moshe Messina. So the Torah, now, Halacha Moshe Messinai tells us that there are really three distinct parts of the Tefillin. There are the Parshios, there are the Batim, and the Ritzuah. So let's go through some of the basics of each of these halachas. So in terms of the Parshios of Tefillin, so the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Menachos that there are four Parshios in Tefillin. This, of course, is based on the Torah Shebichsav, since there are four places in Chumash where the Torah records the mitzvah of Tefillin, two in Parshios Bo, the Kaddish Rekliach, and then one Parshios Shema, one Parshios Yom Shemoa. Since these are the four places where the mitzvah of Tefillin appear, so the halacha is quite clear that all four of these parshas have to be in the pair of Tefillin, both in the Tefillin Shiyad, as well as in the Tefillin Shel Rosh. The Mishnah says in Maseches Menachos that these parshas are ma'akev, that let's say a person only has three parshas, so then you wouldn't say, well, let him at least do 75% of the mitzvah. No, that all four parshas are ma'akev, and if you're missing one of the parshas, so then you do not fulfill the mitzvah entirely. This is part of a whole sugya in the third parak of Maseches Menachos, which is actually why Hilchos Tefillin happens to shtup into Maseches Menachos, because the Mishnah Menachos talks about different things in the Beis HaMikdash that are ma'akev. Sometimes the Torah says that you have different components of a mitzvah, so sometimes you have to do all the different components in order to be yotzei the mitzvah, and sometimes you can do one without the other. So the Mishnah talks about different things in the Beis HaMikdash that are ma'akev and not ma'akev. So in that context, so the Mishnah starts to delineate different things that are ma'akev and not ma'akev in other areas of halacha as well. So the Mishnah says the Arbe Parshas Shem Tefillin are ma'akev and zazil, that even if one of the parshas is missing, one does not fulfill the mitzvah. And then the Mishnah says v'afilu ksav echad ma'akev, and even if one letter of the Tefillin is missing from all these four parshas, so the entire Tefillin are psulim min haTorah. So the Gemara asks on this statement, "Vafilu ksavechad ma'akvan pshita." The Gemara says, "Of course it's ma'akev. If you're missing a letter, so you don't have the parsha. If you don't have the parsha, so then the tefillin are in kosher. So what's the chiddush that one letter is missing passes the tefillin?" So the Gemara says, "No. The chiddush is as follows: that even if all the letters are there, the entire parshas are written, but one of the letters is missing a small part of the letter itself. But one of the letters in the whole parshas of Tefillin is not written 100% properly." So the Gemara says that's also considered to be ksav echad ma'akvin, and the Tefillin are psulim min haTorah. What's an example of a letter that's missing even a part of a letter? So here the Gemara uses the famous phrase, the kutzo shel yud. The Gemara says that If you have a yud, but you're missing one small part of the yud. In the machlekes rishon, we spoke about this the other night in shul. There's a machlekes rishon. What exactly is the kutzah shayud? Is the kutzah shayud the right leg? Is it the left leg? Is it the top crown? Different opinions as to what is that magical, mystical kutzah shayud. And then as we write all three, we want to cover ourselves on all bases. So different opinions. What lemais is ma'akeh? But the gemara says that if the kutzah shayud is missing, then the entire tefillin are possible as well. Kutzah shayud was. There was a Hebrew literature story that was written 150 years ago by someone who was trying to make fun of the Torah. So he wrote a whole story called Kutzah Shayud. The whole thrust of the story was that apparently there was a woman who got a get, and the rabbi found afterwards that there was a Kutzah Shayud missing in the get. So the Kutzah Shayud is missing in the get. So then that letter's not there, then the whole word is no good, that word's no good, then the whole get is no good, and the woman wasn't allowed to be married. So what was the whole point? The whole point was to make fun of the Chachamim that they ruined this woman's life because there was a Kutzah Shayud missing. So it happened to be the person who wrote the story wasn't such a big time Chacham, but he knew how to make a lot of his yarnis, but he knew how to learn that well. So the letter that he picked, the Yud of the Kutzah Shayud, was the person's name was Hillel. So he said, when you spell Hillel, so he said, you spell it Hey Yud Lamed Lamed, and the Kutzah Shayud was missing in the Yud. So first of all, that's not how you spell Hillel. You spell Hillel Hey Lamed Lamed without a Yud. But number two, it says in Uchaz Gittin that even if a person happens to spell his name Hey Yud Lamed Lamed, so you should spell it that way. But if b'di'evad you wrote it without the Yud, so b'di'evad the Yud would be kosher anyway. So the guy never bothered to look in Uchaz Gittin to find out that his whole shtickle Torah was wrong. But anyway, he still wrote the famous story called Kutzah Shayud. Anyway, get back to the story. So in Uchaz Kutzah Shayud, in Uchaz Tefillin, so the Gemara says that if the Kutzah Shayud is missing, that's considered to be the whole letter missing, and the whole letter is missing, then the whole tefillin apostle and everything is possible in the Torah. So the Gemara asks on that statement, if that's pshat in the Mishnah Ksavach and Akva, the Gemara says pshita. The Gemara says, of course that's true. If the Kutzah Shayud's not there, so then it's not a Yud, so finish that. That Tzuras HaYud is Kach Nemar Alach Moshem Sinai. The Yud has to look a certain way. If it doesn't look that way, so it doesn't look that way. If it doesn't look that way, the Yud's not there. If the Yud's not there, then the Tefillin are missing a letter. If the Tefillin are missing a letter, of course they're possible. So the Gemara says, we still don't have Pshat in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, even one letter missing is possible. What do you need a Mishnah for? And you can figure it out on your own. Of course, one letter missing possibles the Tefillin. So the Gemara says, no, the Chiddush of the Mishnah is as follows, that even if every letter is there, and every letter is written properly, but there are two letters that are touching each other, like we spoke about the other night in Shul. What's called the lack of mukav gvil. If the two letters aren't touching each other, that's also considered to be possible. So that's already a if the two letters aren't touching each other, then it's possible. So that's already a chiddush, a gabi chiddush. It means I would have thought that, what's the problem? The letters are there. Every letter is written properly. Touching a base. So I would have thought that's possible. The whole tefillin is no good. So the Gemara says, yeah, you're right. The whole tefillin is no good. That's a din in a Torah that each letter has to be there, and each letter has to be written properly, and each letter has to be written in what's called mukav gvil. It has to be completely surrounded by klaf on all sides. So that's pshat in the Mishnah in Maseches Menachos, that the halach is that the parashas have to be mamish perfect, that every single letter has to be perfect, has to be kedasu chadim. There are complicated dinim.
Is that any different than
the
Sefer Torah?
No.
So why is that a fit?
No, the Mishnah, there's no Mishnah that says it by Sefer Torah. The Mishnah says it by Tefillin and says it by Mezuzah, and then we derive that halacha from Sefer Torah also. So there are details in halachas, very, very detailed halachas as to what's considered to be ma'akev in terms of the ksivas ha'osios, in terms of what constitutes a kosher aleph, what constitutes a kosher beis. Sometimes you can have things which are off a little bit. It's not absolutely 100% perfect, but it's basically still kosher. So those are very, very complicated dinim. So the Mishnah Berurah and Siman Lamidvav and Arachayim wrote a whole kuntras put into the Mishnah Berurah about Tzuras HaOsios. So that's usually what we try to follow, at least in the Kachilah, we try to follow the klum of the Mishnah Berurah in terms of what osios are considered to be exactly right lechatchila and what's considered to be ma'akeh b'di'evah. There are different details based on the sugyas and the Gemara based on the Rishonim, different traditions as to what exactly constitutes a perfectly kosher os lechatchila and what constitutes at least on a level of b'di'evah. Usually, as a rule, is that if the letter basically looks like the letter, and we don't have any Gemara that indicates that this particular part of the letter is ma'akev, so if the letter basically passes our inspection and looks pretty much like a base, so then we're going to be makshir. The only thing is that one has to be very careful because there's a lot of letters that are very close to one another, like a base and a chaf resemble one another. So if a base is supposed to be squared off and a chaf is supposed to be rounded off. So if you have a beis that's rounded or a chaf that's squared, it's going to look like a different letter. So then that's for sure going to be possible. So you have to go mamish through letter by letter to see what's lechatchil and what's b'di'evad in terms of the tefillin and the mezuzah, and for that matter, the sefer Torah being kosher. In terms of the Tzuras HaOsios, things that we should be familiar with, at least as a consumer, is that basically there are three different minhagim in Klal Yisrael in terms of the basic Tzuras HaOsios. There are three different ksavim that have come down to us, three different traditional styles of writing that have come down to us. One is called Ksav Beis Yosef, one is called Ksav Ari, and one is called Ksav Velish. So Ksav Beis Yosef, even though one would have expected that the Ksav Beis Yosef would be the one that would be adopted by the Sfardim, happens to not be that way. It happens to be the standard Ashkenazi Ksav. I don't know why exactly that happened. But the Ksav Beis Yosef is a standard Ksav that has been in practice in the Ashkenazi communities for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. That's the Ksav that most of us are familiar with. That's the Ksav that we basically see in our Sefer Torah. Ksav Ari is pretty much the same. 99% is the same. To an untrained eye, probably wouldn't be able to tell the difference between the Ksav Ari and the Ksav Beis Yosef, but there are a couple of small nuances of differences. That in Ksav Ari, some of the major differences in Ksav Ari and Ksav Beis Yosef, you can take a look at the Sefer Torah. I know there are some Sefer Torah here that are Ksav Ari, and there are some Ksav Beis Yosef, if I'm not mistaken. That the Ksav Ari, which is usually practiced in the Hasidish communities who follow more the Minhagim of the Ari. So Ksav Ari, for example, the Tzadik, so the right head of the tzaddik doesn't face forward, rather it faces backwards. If I had a black, whatever, draw it out. But if you just think for yourself, look at the regular tzaddik, the left leg goes this direction, and the right head also goes in this direction. But in Ksav Ari, so the right head goes backwards, it faces backwards. So where did this come from? What is based on? So this is based on Sifrei Kabbalah, that the two heads of the tzaddik, again, this is way beyond that scope right now, but I'll just mention it, just whet your appetite, has to do with Tafafash's Bracious. Apparently in Sifrei Kabbalah it says that the two heads of the tzaddik
goes up and one's
missing, no? What?
You said one goes one.
Well, according to Ksav Ari, one goes... No. One goes like at a diagonal. One goes at a diagonal, and then it goes this way. And the other one, the one which goes pretty much straight up.
Right.
So, but the head of it, right, the square on top, right. Every letter of the Shatnez gets. Any letter of those has
right.
a square top. So, does the square top point in this direction? Does the square top point in the other direction?
I thought
the machlokus was above the
Zion.
Well, it comes out.
It's rounded.
That's about, there's a machlokus about how to make a ches. Also, whether it's two zions or whether it's above it a zion, it's also true. But on the tzaddik, it's different on the tzaddik. The tzaddik, it's mamish pointing backwards. It's literally going the other direction. So it says in the Svarim HaKadoshim that the two heads of the tzaddik are supposed to be reminiscent of Adam and Chava. So what exactly does that mean? So Adam and Chava kodem achet, so they were Eza Kenegdo, so they were pointing in the same direction. So they were looking together, they were walking in the same way. Whereas the Achra Chet, and they started to fight between one another. So Adam was going one direction, Chava was going another direction. So the two heads of the tzaddik, according to the Ksav Beis Yosef, is kodem achet, because they're both facing the same direction. Whereas according to the Ari, it's the Achra Chet, because they're facing in different directions. So should your Sefer Torah be kodem achet or Achra Chet, depends on much how your Shalom Bayis is going. So if you have a good head, wife, and you'll get along well, so then you should have your tzaddis for you. You should have Ksav Beis Yosef. I'm just kidding. If you're fighting with each other, so then you should have Ksav Ari. Anyway, again, strange. I don't understand it. I don't pretend to understand it, but that's what it says in the Sfar. Anyway, getting back to the story. So that's just one highlight. If you want to know very quickly whether the parashas are Beis Yosef or Ari, that's one thing that you can identify right away. There are other nuances, like Elchana pointed out, that the Ches is a little bit different, that the Ches in Ksav Beis Yosef is basically two Zions with a crown on top, whereas the Ches in Ksav Ari is a Zion and a vav with a crown on top. There are a couple of other differences in terms of the shin is slightly different, and some of the other ones, ayin tes, are slightly different. Again, the very, very minuscule differences between Beis Yosef and Ari. Yeah.
The shin is, I'm not thinking of Bob, yeah, but the shin is very different. One is at the bottom is just a line, and one is a point.
No. The line is a difference. So the line is Ksav Elish. That's not neither Beis Yosef nor Ksav Ari. So again, so there are differences, very, very small nuances and differences. Ksav Elish, which is usually the traditional Sephardi Ksav, you probably see if you've ever seen the Sephardi Sefer Torah, you know, the stand-up Sefer Torahs, or other regular, sometimes the Sephardi Sefer Torahs don't stand up like that. So you'll notice that the Ksav is a little bit different, a little bit more like blocky kind of print, a little bit different nuances, that the shins are a little bit flatter, they don't really come to a point. The bases are slightly different. There are a few, the yuds are slightly different. There are slight nuances of difference. Again, it's very recognizable. This is a shin and this is a dalet. This is a gimel. You could tell any of these ksavim. Not like any of them are written in Japanese. They're all basically kisvei hakodesh. They're all basically ksav ashuris, but slight nuances in terms of minhagim about shaping certain of the letters. How do we pask in halacha about all these ksavim? So the haskamas haposkim is that all these ksavim are kosher. That one cannot say that one is kosher and one is possible. These are all traditional ksavim. They all meet the basic basic standards in terms of Hilchos Alsios. All the letters in each of these ksavim are recognizable as such. So as long as the letters are written properly in that ksav and they're recognizable as that letter, and the letters are not touching, so they meet all the criteria min haTorah. The rest is basically min hagim. So whether the shin is a little bit like this, the ayin is a little bit like this, the yud is a little like this. So those are basically the Torah and minog, and therefore basically we assume that all three of these ksavim are kosher. Therefore, it's generally assumed halacha that it'll say Ashkenazi wants to get an aliyah in a Sephardi shul or something, so that's okay. We don't assume that is the Sefer Torah is possible, even though his tefillin that he's wearing is a Beis Yosef and he's getting an aliyah in a Ksavelish and his mezuzahs are Ari and everything is one big hodgepodge. So Mikra, didn't we assume that all of these ksavim are accepted? That's what Rav Moshe writes in a tshuva. That's what most of the poskim say. Nevertheless, you mean in the same pair? Yeah, it's hard to say it's possible, but the poskim say that it's not. It's not really supposed to do that. I remember somebody once told me that he had his tefillin opened up and he noticed that the last line was Ksav Ari. Everything else was Ksav Ari. Yosef, the last line was Ksav Ari. So apparently what happened was there was a mistake at the very end of the tefillin, and they were lucky that it was a mistake after the last Shem Hashem, so you were able to erase those letters. So the Sefer fixed it. Was a Chassidish Sofer, so he was writing Ksav Ari. So I don't know, he didn't realize, I don't know what happened exactly, but he made by habit, he just wrote Ksav Ari, didn't realize that the rest of the parasha was Bis Yosef. So the Pelskim don't like that. But again, to say it's possible, it's hard to say. It's hard to say that it's possible. You see this very often. A lot of people in the tefillin have their parshas of Beis Yosef, but their shin on their bias is Ari, or vice versa. So we talk about the shin, we'll talk about that a little bit more. But anyway, Meikra did all of the Ksav Makosh, and nevertheless, the poskim right lechatchil, like in any other area of halacha, one should follow what the minig and his family, what the minig, his particular family, is all about. It's like davening, you know, nuschat tefillah. You yaitse with nusch Ashkenazi, you know, nusch Sfad, you know, nusch Zavud, but any of the nuschos, you yaitse. But the proper thing to do is lechatchil, to follow what the minig in your family is. So therefore, one who comes from a standard Ashkenazi community, from a non-Hasidic community, so they're buying tefillin, so they should, more correctly, they should buy a Ksav Beis Yosef tefillin. If they're buying mezuzah, they should buy a Ksav Beis Yosef tefillin. Again, the yaitzi with any of them, they're all kosher, but lechatchilim, when one is buying a new pair of tefillin, so I'm not saying one should go throughout that tefillin and go buy a Beis Yosef tefillin, but the lechatchilim, if a person comes from an Ashkenazi community, they don't follow the Hasidic Minhagim, so then they should have Beis Yosef tefillin. Those who follow the other Hasidic Minhagim, Guy Davins Osuch Svar, whatever, other Chassidish practitioners, he wears a gat, whatever he does, so he should have a Arit villain, and those who come from Sephardi communities, so they should have a Ksav Velish villain. But again, the Ikra Din, all of them, we assume, are kosher. The details of the halachas of parashas we're not really going to deal with because most of them are not relevant for us. They're relevant for the soferim, so hopefully you should go to a reliable soferim to make sure that the parashas are all written kedas u'chedin, and we're not going to be fixing too much on our tefillin. Even those who have the guts to fix a little bit here and there in Sefer Torah, most people aren't going to start the pashkim around with tefillin, and rightfully so, unless you're very, very qualified for the job. So we're not going to spend too much time on the parashas. We want to move more into the realm of the batim, which is something which is much more relevant for us because obviously we see the batim every day, so that has become critical for us to know what is kosher, what is not kosher. So the Gemara tells us, based on Psukim, that the basic tzura of the Bayis Shel Yad and the Bayis Shel Rosh are fundamentally different from one another. That the Bayis Shel Yad is one Bayis. The Gemara derives this from a Pasuk, that that the Os Echad, that it's supposed to be one Bayis, in contrast to the Tilin Shel Rosh, which are the Totofos Berinecha. So the Totofos has the connotation of four. How in the world does the Totofos have the connotation of four? The Gemara has a lot of different drushes as to why that is, but the bottom line is Kachnemer Halacha Moshe Mesinai, that the Tilin Shel Rosh are made up of four distinct compartments, and each of the parashas are written separately and put into each one of the different batim. So the basic Tzura of Tilin Shel Yad is one bias, one long, long parasha, all the parashas on one piece of cloth. That's called the Tilin Shel Yad, whereas the batim for the Tilin Shel Rosh, that's made up in terms of four different parashas. When we say that the Bat, in particular the Tefillin Shel Rosh, have four different parashas in terms of, and each parasha goes into a different box, so what order exactly are the parashas supposed to be in? So this is, of course, a major, major machlokes of Rishonim. This is one of the most interesting in machloksim historically and halachically in the history of Klal Yisrael is maybe the machlokes Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam in terms of what is the order of the Seid, the Hapashios, how the bottom of the tefillin supposed to look. So let's start with the tefillin shel Rosh, because that's where the easiest way of understanding the machlokes is. Then we'll move and see how that affects the tefillin shel Yad. So in terms of the tefillin shel Rosh, so we know there are four parshios, and we know there are four batim. So we just have to figure out which goes into which. So if you would ask me, without knowing, without opening up any Gemara Menachos, I would say, well, it makes sense they should go into the order the way they appear in the Chumash. Like, why not? Why would anybody in a million years think that they don't go in the order that they go in the Chumash? So therefore, the correct order would be in the first bias goes Parshas Kaddish, and then goes Parshas Vayakhi V'yacha, and then goes Parshas Shema, and then goes Parshas Vayom Shema. That's like the story about the guy who they opened up his tefillin. The guy was getting drunk all the time, so they tried to figure out why he's getting drunk all the time, so he opened up his tefillin. So they realized that in the Parshas tefillin, it says Laman Tizkaru, it says Laman Tishkaru. So then they realized there's a much more serious problem, because Laman Tizkaru doesn't, not supposed to be in the tefillin altogether. It's the third Parshas Kriyashma. So getting back to this, the guy was very, very drunk. So getting back to the story, so there are four parshas. So Kaddish in the first, Vechaviach in the second, Shema in the third, Vayom Shema in the fourth. That's what I would have said. Not just that I would have said that. That's what Rashi says. That's what the Rambam says. That's what most of the Rishonim say, that the order is Keseder HaKesuvim B'Torah. It means in theory, if you would have X-ray vision and you would read the parshas the way they appear, you would stand in front of the person and you would be reading from, like you read Lashon HaKodesh, so you would be able to see right away. You would see Kaddish, Rech V'yach, Hashma, V'yam Shema, Mamash, Kesed, Rech Sivim HaTorah. That's what Rashi learns. So Rabbeinu Tam had a whole complicated kasha with Rashi based on his reading of the Gemara Menachos, and basically Rabbeinu Tam switched everything around. Rabbeinu Tam says that the first parsha is correct, that's Kaddish, the second parsha is also correct, V'hayoki V'yacha, but the third parsha is different and the fourth parsha is different. Not that they're different parshas, but that the order is flipped. That V'yam Shemoah precedes the parsha of Shema. So the Rishonim say a way to remember it is Makshirin Havayas Lahadadi. That's a phrase that appears in Maseches Kiddushin, and Dafyomi recently Makshirin Havayas Lahadadi in a totally different context. But it means the two Vahayas come next to each other. The way to remember Bina Tam Shita is that after Vayaki Biacha comes Vayam Shemo and then comes Shema. This is the Shita's Rabbeinu Tam. So some people think that Rabbeinu Tam made this up, that for thousands of years everybody was wearing tefillin. One Rabbeinu Tam reread the Gemara and changed everything. It's not exactly what happened at all. If you look already in the earlier sources in the Gaonim, this was already a burning machlokes, already hundreds of years before Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam entered onto the scene. There were two different opinions in the Gaonim already as to what the Seder and Ochos Tefillin is. Rabbeinu Tam just popularized a particular Shita, and because of the authority of Rabbeinu Tam, it became known as Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin. But it wasn't. Rabbeinu Tam didn't make up Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin. It was just he who really was the most prominent Rishon who subscribed to the Shita. Yeah. What? Which Gaonim had to say what about? So there are machloksim within the Rishonim, which Gaonim said what? So there's a whole machlokes what Rav Hai Gaon said. Rav Hai Gaon was one of the most prominent Gaonim. So half the Rishonim, obviously the Rishonim and Rashi side claimed that he was on their team, and the Rabbeinu Tam who claimed he was on their team. So you had different traditions within the Gaonim themselves. I don't know whether this is absolutely a historical fact or not, but I was told at one point that the archaeologists have dug up in different places. I don't know, Masada and other places. They've dug up old pairs of tefillin, and they found both. That they were tefillin. Again, I can't say for certain whether this is true. They found that there were two different. Apparently, there were two different traditions that predate already the days of the Gaonim. That apparently, even Bizmant Kupas HaTanoim, there was such a machlokes. Again, the Gemara doesn't mention the machlokes. The Gemara doesn't make mention of the fact that there were two different traditions at the time, which is very strange. If they existed, that the Gemara wouldn't have mentioned it. But again, that's what somebody told me. I don't know whether it's authoritative or not. There is a tradition that the Rishonim quote that they dug up a pair of tefillin that was in Geniza from the kever of Mordechai, apparently in Persia somewhere. So they had a tradition where Mordechai and Esther were buried. So apparently they dug up an old pair of tefillin, Kevi Cheskel, I forgot already which one it was, maybe Kevi Cheskel in Bavel, one of the old kvarim, they dug up a pair of tefillin, and then there was all machlokes which way it said. So some said it said one way, so the other way. Again, it's hard to get our fingers on exactly. It's always strange when you dig up things from Geniza, so you're never really sure whether you have all the information. So Lamasha, there was a machlekes Rishonim we mentioned before about the Kutz HaShoyud, about whether the Kutz HaShoyud is on the left side or on the right side, Rashi Rabbeinu Tam. So apparently it was an old Sefer Torah that dug up in some Geniza from 1,000 years ago, and it had one way, not the other way. So he said, you see from here that Rabbeinu Tam's not right, because it didn't have his Kutz HaShoyud. So others responded, yeah, that's why they put it into Shemus, because they realized that it was possible. So again, yeah, it's very hard to bring rise from these kinds of things. But anyway, getting back to our story. So Rabbeinu Tam insisted that this is the order of the parshiyas. Rabbeinu Tam's order gets a little bit more complicated when we're dealing with the Tefillin Shel Yad for the following reason. That everybody agrees, just that everybody agrees, that Tefillin have to be written Kesidron. It means you have to write the parshiyas of Tefillin from the first Vav in Vayidaber, Parshas Kaddish, to the end, Al Aretz of Ayom Shemoah. Every single letter has to be written one after another. You can't write some letters, then go to the end, and come back to the beginning, or you made a mistake, fill in afterwards. There's a Din Min HaTorah, it has to be written, Mamash Kesidron. The Gemara never says this explicitly. The Gemara alludes to this halacha, the Mechilta says it Befeirish, that there is such a halacha, that's a Din Min Bedaraisa, called Kesidron. Somebody once wrote a letter to the Chazanish, saying that maybe we don't paskin like this Mechilta, because it doesn't mention the Gemara. So the Chazanish wrote that that's ridiculous. Of course, we pass like it. All the Rishonim quote, and it says in Shulchan Aruch, and for the last 2,000 years, no one has ever questioned the authenticity of this Mechilta, so he doesn't think that's time now in the 1950s to start to question whether this is a valid Mechilta. So, of course, we accept this. That's the din midarais of Lishum Safek. There's a din that tefillin and mezuzahs, for that matter, have to be written Kesidron. So, the Rishonim now have a problem, according to Rabbeinu Tam. So, l'chori, you have to write the parshas Kesidron. Kesidron means Kesedra Kosav Torah. So, you have to write the parshas Kaddish first, then Vayokaviyacha, then Shema. Even according to Rabbeinu Tam, you have to write Shema before you write Vayom Shemoah, otherwise it's Shalok Kesidron. So when Tefillin Shalosh, it's no big deal. So you write Shema, put it on a little piece of cloth, put it aside, then write Vayom Shemoah. And then when it comes to putting them into the batim, so you stick in Vayom Shemoah before you stick in Shema. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, Tefillin Shalosh is no big deal. You can write a Kesidron, and you can have the Parshas in the right order, and it's not a contradiction. But a Tefillin Shel Yad becomes a little bit strange, becomes very, very muddling, Tefillin Shel Yad, because you write Kaddish, then you write Vayokiviyacha, and now what must you write next? You must write Shema next. If you don't write Shema next, then it's Shaloka Seder HaKosav HaTorah. But you can't write Shema next, because you have to have Makshin HaVayis LaDodis. What do you have to do? So you skip a space, you leave that whole column blank for Hayom Shemoah. You go to the very end of the cloth, you write Shema first, and then you come back and you write Vayom Shemoah. So it turns out that it was written Kesidron, but now it appears in the Tefillin, in Hanochas of Tefillin, in a sense, Shalom Kesidron of Makshin Nevayis Nadod. That's what the Rishon writes. That's what you got to do. According to Rabbeinu Tam, very, very strange halacha, but Lechora, that's the only option that's available according to Shittas Rabbeinu Tam by Tefillin Shel Yad. So again, so we have a machlekes of Rishonim, and it was a burning machlekes, and the Gaonim, and the Rishonim, and bottom line, how do we pass in halacha in this machlekes? So come the later Rishonim and write that it was Nimnu v'gomru by the later Rishonim that we accept Shittas Rashi, that Rashi was accepted, the Rambam, Rashi and the Rambam in the same opinion. That's the way it was Nifsuk in the later Rishonim, and that's how it appears in Shulchan Aruch. So we pass in Belishim Sofik in Ilchus Tefillin, the halacha l'mai says like Shittas Rashi, and if a person puts on Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin b'zman hazeh to fulfill the mitzvah Tefillin, he does not fulfill the mitzvah Tefillin. The Ram Lahatos, the Torah was given to us to be Machriya based on the Rov HaChachamim, and the Rov HaChachamim in the later generations and the later Rishonim were Machriya against Shittas Rabbeinu Tam. So we did not accept Shittas Rabbeinu Tam at all lahalacha. Mikra din, we only paskin like Shittas Rashi. Nevertheless, even though Rabbeinu Tam Shittas has basically been rejected, the Rishonim write, still Rabbeinu Tam. So midei sveika sveika lo nafka. So therefore, many Rishonim write that there was a practice existed to be yotzei Shittas Rabbeinu Tam as well. That lachum rabbi alma li eses eis to be chayshesh to Shittas Rabbeinu Tam. So what exactly does that mean to be chayshesh to Rabbeinu Tam? So there were two different practices that developed how to be chayshesh for Rabbeinu Tam. So the early Rishonim write that the way to be chayshesh for Rabbeinu Tam, the way to fulfill Rabbeinu Tam, is at the same time you're fulfilling Rashi. Just get two pairs of tefillin. It's a big deal. So you get two pairs of tefillin. The tefillin are very small. Our tefillin are about three times the size the tefillin used to be in the days of Chazal. The shear for the bias, the size of bias, is very, very small. Our tefillin are much, much bigger than they were. The reason being, because it becomes harder to write. You're not as skilled as sofer, so yeah, you need more room to patch around with. So as the years have gone on, so the tefillin have grown in terms of size. They've started to grow, to scale back a little bit. If you look at the old European tefillin, so from 50 years ago, they were tremendous. There was came out no room for, imagine one of those pairs of tefillin on a bar mitzvah boy would take up three quarters of his head, of his arm. But now in America, in Eretz Yisrael now, so the tefillin are not quite as small as they were bizman chazal, but they're on the way back in terms of smaller. So The Rishonim write that there's plenty of room. The Gemara Ervin says there's a makom yesh b'yizro of the rosh that niach based tefillin. There's room on the arm, there's room on the head to put on two pairs of tefillin at the same time. So they would have, like, sometimes you see it. You see this at the Kosel every once in a while. I see some of the old Sephardi people sometimes walk around with two pairs of tefillin on mamish at the same time. So those two pairs of tefillin are Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. So that was the old style in the Rishonim, that those who wanted to be chayshish Rabbeinu Tam would wear the tefillin shel ya and the tefillin two yads and two roshes, one Rashi's parshas and one Rabbeinu Tam's. So the Rishonim say it's not a problem about Tosef because one's right and one's wrong. You're not wearing two kasha pairs. If you wear two kasha pairs of tefillin at the same time, so then you're over about Tosef. But if one's kasha, one's pasul, so then that's not called about Tosef. One is a tefillin and one is just you're wearing black straps on your arm for the kicks, for a stomp, for the fun of it. So that was the old practice in the Rishonim. Then in the later generations, those who wanted to be chayshish for Rabbeinu Tam found that it was just technically too difficult. The tefillin were getting bigger, and there was no room to wear two tefillin at the same time. So then the later practice began, the practice that we're more familiar with, of wearing Rashi tefillin for most of the davening. Then at the very end of davening, Asher Bolot Zion time, somewhere along them, you take off Rashi tefillin, you put Rabbeinu Tam tefillin on, albeit without a bracha. That was, in a sense, a later development of this minhag, which came about because just the tefillin just wasn't feasible to wear two at the same time. So you had this idea that existed in the Rishonim that you're supposed to wear, it's a nice thing, it's a midas chasidus, it's a proper thing to wear Rabbeinu Tam tefillin as well. So the Shulchan Aruch writes that since Mikra Din, it's not really necessary, since we Mikra Din Paskin like Rashi, so therefore the Shulchan Aruch writes that not everybody should adopt this Chumrah because it's a little bit of Yuara, it's a little bit, it looks like a haughtiness. Person's showing that he's very arrogant by every chumrah. He's running around collecting chumras, so it doesn't look right. It looks like he's just trying to be a show-off. So there's a concept in Allah called Mechzik Yura. It's a famous ma'aseh with the Rav, that somebody asked the Rav whether a particular chumrah that he wanted to adopt was a Mechzik Yura. Does this really look like Gaiva? So the Rav said, no, this is not Mechzik Yura. This is the real thing. This is real Yura. This is the real McCoy. So you have to be careful when you accept certain chumras. They shouldn't be show-offy types of chumras. So Shulchan Aruch writes, therefore, not every person should be wearing Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. Only somebody who's Muchzik Bechasidus, somebody who's really, everybody knows that he's a Zah Chosid, he's a really Machben in all other mitzvahs. Rabbi Shech once gave us the mashal. Says, you know, it's Avda, when a person gets dressed up. So if a person is dressing, a woman's dressing up nicely, she's going to a wedding, then she puts on a nice fancy necklace so that the necklace will enhance her outfit. But if she's walking around in a nightgown, if she's wearing a $10,000 piece of jewelry, so everyone looks ridiculous. That doesn't fit. So he said the same is true in mitzvahs. If a person is keeping all the other mitzvahs, he's machped on Lashon Hara, and he davens with Kavanah, and he's learning all the time, and then he starts picking up chumras, so he's machped on Chodesh, he's machped on Chol Yisrael, he's machped on this, that, and the other thing. He has all the chumras, so that it enhances his beauty, so then Ataka makes him look more mehuda. But if the guy's not so machped on Lashon Hara, the guy talks in the middle of davening, the guy barely learns, but he's machben a chodesh. He's machben a chodesh. So it looks silly. It doesn't fit right. It doesn't fit into the general picture of the ruchnias that the person is holding by. So the person has to be careful in that area. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch recommends, that this chumrah of wearing Rabbeinu Tam tefillin is that type of a chumrah that could potentially be a very show-off, especially in the old days. Guys walk around with two pairs of tefillin, so everyone thinks that this guy's a real tzaddik. And we all know he's not such a big tzaddik. So the Shulchan Aruch says he has to be an isha muksek pechasidus. He has to be a real chosid. So that's what the later generations have pointed out, that the Shulchan Aruch and a chassid with a big C. Now somehow became a chassid with a little C. It means, well, guys, I'm muksik bechassidus. I'm a chassid, so I can also wear tefillin during Rabbeinu Tam. So that has become the minig in the chassidish community, that they've accepted upon themselves this chumrah of wearing Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. So the Aruch HaShulchan writes that once it's become so commonplace that every Tom, Dick, and Harry is wearing a Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, so he says, then even if a regular guy wants to put a Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, it's not a Yura anymore. It doesn't mean anything. A guy's walking around. I remember one of my bachurim in yeshiva. He used to walk in every day into shiur. He always come late every day. He'd come with his big tefillin bag. It was two, you know, because he was a bachur. So he had one of these like guns, like long tefillin bag with Rashi Rabbeinu Tam. So I didn't want to tell him that the more correct thing to do is to come to shiur on time than the mafan or Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, but every day he'd come late. The reason was because he had to put on his Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. So he should have davened an earlier minyan. So the Aruch HaShulchan writes that Bizman Azad, that it's so common already for people to wear Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, so those, whoever wants to do it is Nishkafelech. So there are different minhagim today. Usually what the breakdown has been is that those with Hasidic background tend to put on Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, and the Sfardi to put on Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, whereas, because again, it wasn't a Rabbeinu Tam issue, it was a Sfardi. It went cross party lines. There were Rishonim in both camps who insisted on both. And usually in the Misnagdisha communities, those who follow more the Litvish minhagim, the Yakusha community, so they really did not accept this minig of wearing Rabbi Natan tefillin and Anayim Mizeh. Most of them don't wear Rabbi Natan tefillin. So again, there are different practices on Anayim Mizeh.
All those
children,
you never know if it was really possible or not.
No, but you.
Because you said you skip
the mayor. Oh, you mean if the guy, yeah, you never know anything. Yeah, when you always see a period film, you never know what happened. You're trusting the sofa. So you're trusting that the sofa did it properly. Rav Moshe, when he came to America, so he didn't wear Rabbi Natan tefillin. So I think in Europe he did, and when he came to America he didn't. So he writes in a tshuva that if he couldn't get a real good pair of Rabbi Natan tefillin, he said, I don't know, he had some certain chumras about within Rabbi Natan tefillin. He says no one was willing to write for him or something. So there was a tshuva between a correspondence between him and the Lubavitcher Rebbe. So apparently the Lubavitcher Rebbe wrote back to him that, don't worry, if you want Rabbi Natan tefillin, I'll get you Rabbi Natan tefillin. I'll get you the best. You tell me a Hiddi, you tell me a chumra, you tell me a minig, whatever you want, I'll get you a Lutfisher Rabbi Natan tefillin. Apparently he can only get a Chassidish one. He didn't want the Chassidish one. He had a Lutfisher one. So they made him a Lutfisher Rabbi Natan tefillin. So I think in the later years, I think Rabbi Moshe wore it. I think that's the way the story goes.
People I've seen very rarely, but they've gone three pairs.
Who's the third pair?
I don't know.
I'm not sure either. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, because what happens is that the big Rashi's, the Machlokes Rashi Rebbe Tam, is the flip side with Shemusha Rabbah.
Right. So that would be four pairs. In theory, you should have four pairs. That's the Reb Chaim's Chiddush, right? Reb Chaim and a Chiddush. There are two other shittas in the Rishonim about the order. Again, minority views as to what the order is. Whether you go from left to right or right to left. So it's flipped of everything. So Reb Chaim claimed that Lamaisa doesn't make a difference because Me'ikra Din, if you put the tefillin on upside down, you're also Yotze. So even if the tefillin, even the parshas are written left to right or right to left, they're still okay. So that probably wouldn't be the end of the world. The Gra apparently didn't wear a Benetam tefillin, so they asked the Gra, the way the story goes, they asked the Gra why he didn't wear a Benetam tefillin. So he said that if you're going to wear a Benetam tefillin, then you have to wear a Raivit tefillin, you have to wear a Shemusha Rabbit tefillin, and you have to wear a Yerim tefillin. He said he made a cheshire of 64 different permutations of pairs of tefillin. So he says he has to learn, he has enough time to put tefillin on all day. So he only said Rashi, that's the halach, and finish, and nothing else matters. Yes, sir. So we said that there's a fundamental difference in terms of what the bias looks like, that the bias shel yad is one bias, and the bias shel rosh is four distinct batim. So the Gemara tells us in Maseches Menachos that that's not exactly the case. That we speak about the bias shel rosh being four distinct compartments, so the Gemara comments that there are two different sukkim that seem to conjure up different images in terms of the construction of the bias shel rosh. One place, the Pesuk says, a few places, the Torah says, L'totofos, which means tat, pas, means four, that refers to four. But in another place, the Torah says, L'zikaron b'enecha. So the Torah doesn't use the phrase L'totofos. So the Gemara says, the meaning of that Pesuk, the significance of that phrase, is zikaron, so tell me, zikaron echad v'lo dal zikaronis, that it has to be one bias rather than four. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? Either four or one, how can it be both? Talking says no. It means as follows. That means it has to be four compartments, but the four compartments have to be me'or echad. It has to be from one basic piece of leather. It has to be from one piece of skin. So it has to be. It has to be in a sense molded out in such a way that it's four different places. It's not like the shel yad, but there's only one hole. There's only one place to put the parsha. There are four distinct parshas, but the or is made me'or echad. It comes from one ultimate source of animal skin. That's what the Gemara says. That's what the pasuk of zikaron b'enechah teaches me. So there's a big machlekes haposkim practically. Speaking, tachlis, what does that mean? And the difference between the two different approaches is a difference of about $500 or so. So what exactly does that word mean, that zikaron b'enecha or echad? So many Rishonim describe the making of tefillin, Rashi and the Rambam, when he described how you actually produce the or for batim, so describe that the tefillin have to be literally or echad. Namely, it has to come from one piece of skin. You have to take an animal and you take one big piece of skin and you mold it in such a way, when the skin is soft, so you're running over a mold in such a way that when it hardens at the four different compartments. Everyone's seen those, you know, the early stages of making tefillin, those things they bring when you're in fifth grade, they teach you about making tefillin. So that's basically what it is according to these Rishonim, that it's one skin, it's or echad bamish, zikaron b'enecha, but it's been molded into four distinct compartments. That's what many Rishonim say. Then there are other poskim who said, no, that it doesn't have to be that. You can mamish take four different animals, four different pieces of skin that are never connected, never related, nothing. All you have to do is just be mechaber them biyachad. You have to just make sure that halachically you fuse them into one unit, and that's called zikar nechad ben nechad. It doesn't have to be made naturally mi'or echad. It can be artificially mi'or echad also, as long as lemais it's not connected to one another. What you don't, you can't have. You can't take one bias and put it over here, and one bias over here, and one bias over here, and one bias over here, that the four have nothing to do with each other. They have to be connected, they have to be fused together, but it doesn't have to be a natural unit. So what would that mean? How would you artificially connect them? So the many poskim said, by taking some glue, take some good strong Helm's glue, and you take four different pieces of skin, and you glue them together, and chunks. So you have zikar and echad, bein echad, and finish, end of discussion. So that's a big machlekes of Rishonim. So the first group of Rishonim say it has to be naturally or echad, mamash v'meh ma'achas me or echad, and the others say no, that it doesn't have to be mi'or echad, that it has to be lemaisa, all connected together, but it can even be artificially connected through glue or through stitching or through some other kind of way, artificial connection. So the nafkamina ladin is going to be tremendous in terms of nafkamina practice, is going to be tremendous. How complicated is it to make batim? So if you go the second route, so it's mamash a cinch to make a bayish. Take four pieces of skin, take some almonds, glue them together. So a bayish should cost you, the tefillin sharosh should cost you $20, whatever. Forget about the pasha, just the bayish itself. A couple of pieces of animal skin, you glue them together and sure, there's nothing to it. Mashainkin, if you go the other route, if you go the first route of or echad, so it takes a lot of work. You got to work on it and mold it properly and perfectly and make sure that it mamash meets the criteria of or echad into four batim. It's going to take a lot of work. We know. Or products, whatever takes more work, costs more money. So that's why what we call the less expensive pairs of tefillin out there called the pshutas. It means the very, very simple, basic tefillin, which most of us don't have anymore. You know, years ago, you saw them much, much more common. Now, Baruch Hashem, Achshador, you see, every bar mitzvah kid has the most beautiful pairs of tefillin as man as it wasn't always like that. When I was younger, you saw a lot of these very, very flimsy tefillin floating around on the scene. So the less expensive tefillin, the pshutas, so they're not made in the orechad there. They're assumed that luckily that's called quote unquote orechad because it's glued together, but it's not naturally mi orechad. So according to many poskim, those would be very questionable. Whereas mikra din we paskin, they're also kosher, but they're definitely questionable. Masha ein kein, the better quality tefillin that we see bizman hazeh are the tefillin which are mi orechad mamish. Let me take a look on your box of tefillin on the outside. So one of the wonderful things that it says on the side is Nase mi orechad bibeh magasa. It's telling you that it's orechad, but it's true or not, it's irrelevant, but that's at least what it says on the box. It says it's Nase mi orechad. You have to always take with a grain of salt what it says on the side of the box of your tefillin, because it also says Pei ayin yud hei kuf. What does that stand for? Povira Kodesh or something. So the soul from all of a joke, it says, you know what it stands for? It stands for fake. Pei ayin yud kuf. It means fake. It's filling out a forgery. So no, that's not what it really stands for. So within the orechad, the tefillin, there were two different practices as to how to produce the orechad. They were called behemagasas and behemadakas. So the behemagasa tefillin were made from big animals, from oxen, from cows, from strong leather, and the behemadakas were made from sheep, were made from behemadakas, from much easier leather. So apparently the behemagasas were much more expensive. It was more difficult to maneuver, whatever it was. So they were the higher quality tefillin. The behemadakas were kind of middle ground. So for many years, they had like these three different tiers in terms of the batim, the quality of the batim. The magasas were the highest level; they were the most expensive. The medakas were the middle level; they were orechad, but they were less, easier to make. And the pshutas were the not real orechad in the first place. Bizman hazeh, behemadakas have basically gone out of style. That you only be daka tefillin you'll see. Like if you see an old pair of tefillin from 30 years ago, I don't know if anyone's making daka tefillin anymore. The reason is it's not practical really, because the problem with daka tefillin is that they can never be fixed. Let's say if sometimes a person smashes the corner or something on a pair of tefillin, so you can easily fix the behemadakas tefillin. Whereas behemadakas, again, I'm not a sofer, not batimach, I don't know the details, but apparently the batimachas tell you that behemadakas, once they get smashed, they're done, finished. You can't fix them up at all. So it's just not cost effective. So nice that you don't really see too many dakas around. So the only tefillin you'll be seeing are gasels and pshutas. And again, bizman hazeh, in the regular frum community, so 95% of the tefillin you're going to see are going to be gasels, whereas it wasn't always like that. If you go into a bookstore and you buy a very inexpensive pair of tefillin for $50, $100 or something, so those are inevitably going to be pshutas. So a good pair of tefillin, which are gasels, again, obviously the parshas, the quality of parshas, go significantly into the price. But if you're getting a pair of tefillin for less than $500, so you have to start to wonder what exactly is the quality of the parshas, what's the quality of the batim. So tefillin are significantly expensive. expensive for, it takes a sofer, just do a very simple cheshbon, it takes a sofer about 15 hours to write a pair of parshas for tefillin, for the Yalan Shirosh. So 15 hours of work, just your skilled labor, so it's going to cost a couple hundred dollars just to pay the sofer. Then you have to figure out the supplies, and you have to figure out all the middlemen in between, and you got to figure out the bottom. So the fact that tefillin are expensive, there is maybe they shouldn't be as expensive as they are, but there's good reason why the tefillin costs money. So the tefillin which we, most of us wear, the tefillin gassos, are significantly more expensive than the others, because the preparation of the bottom is in fact an expensive proposition. Okay, we'll stop for now. Next week we'll continue something.